We're all doctors now. That's idiots. Are we gonna keep it funny?
Yeah.
I mean, we're serious. We're doctors.
Can doctors be funny?
That's the question. We like
this. It's kind of one of those things. It's like a duck. You know, you see a duck in the water, right? The duck looks like it's cool, but the duck's freaking working hard under the water. Wow, working hard. That's how our place is. We look cool, but we're working hard.
You are now listening to the Duck Legs Podcast.
Now we are doctors of physical therapy. Still bringing the raw content, not holding anything back. We're going to laugh, we're going to love, we're going to cry. We're going to touch each other in some very sensitive places. The bullshit that you're about to hear is definitely not any kind of medical advice, and you should not listen to this at all. This is for entertainment purposes only, and we say that loosely.
Sure.
Oh, fuck. Say that again?
Use those duck legs to stir up feelings in their heart.
Yes.
Because that's really what that's all about, to make people feel like they're not alone in their struggles, that everybody's trying to make it happen. And sometimes you just need to peep behind the curtain to realize, oh, these other people that I've made inhuman are actually human. That's cool. That feels good.
That's better than anything we could have said.
Well, I don't do a lot of things well, but I'm pretty good at repackaging words.
We can hear them. We can see them. We can smell them.
We got one of those new 4D mics, huh?
Yes. It's all sensory, so like we can put our hands on it and you can feel us touching it.
I mean, I thought I was feeling a little uncomfortable, but now that there's more hands, I'm feeling a little better. Like when it's just one stranger, I mean you expect an exchange of funds, but when it's more, it becomes a legal thing, right?
Yeah. How many hands can you take before it's enough?
That's a great question. That's like what is it, the old Tootsie Pop thing?
Yeah.
How many licks to the center?
Yeah.
How many hands is enough? I mean, we're looking at least six, right? We've got six hands in between us. Eight, actually.
Can they all be different people, or is it just like three people with two hands?
I don't exclude anyone. Like, because that would be an instance of disability. I don't see disabilities. I would feel them in that instance, but I wouldn't see them because I'd be face down probably.
Yeah. And that's all the time we have, folks.
Yeah. That would be great. I've been sitting around. I'm actually glad we're doing this because it gets me talking.
Yeah.
So that way I'm not thinking. I'm supposed to do that first improv performance tonight.
Hell yeah, dude. Congrats.
Maybe. We shall see.
What how have those classes been going?
Yeah, so the way that they're structured is they're set up, there's three levels of classes. I just finished up with the first one. Well, the teacher basically said that each class ends in a capstone, which is a performance. So he's like, frankly, I just think that you guys need to have people in the room. I don't give a shit if you're good, if you're bad, if you're this, if you're that. You guys want to learn improv and you have to perform in front of people. So this is just part of your education. You're not actually here to provide value. They're just paying so that they feel like it's a show. Like that's just kind of how he's viewing it. So this is the first of three. The second one starts on Monday. It's good. It's the thing that's so funny is he'll say, in the first couple weeks, he's like, relax, just be yourself. I'm like, I don't think you want that. because not only that, but we're trained as physical therapists. All we do is ask questions, right? That's like, literally like what our job is. And that's not what you're supposed to do in improv. Like all through PT school, they're like, ask open-ended questions, open-ended questions, open-ended questions, and then just listen. And with improv, open-ended questions are like the death of a scene because you're taking this huge funnel of words and possibilities and you're just handing them to the other person on stage. Mm-hmm. Here you go. Try to guess where I was going with this. Like, they got no clue. So you're supposed to make statements. And your questions are supposed to be like, so it's just really confusing. It's really hard. It's anti-training.
And then the big thing about improv is yes and, right?
Yeah, and so yes and really is, what's funny is I thought it was really direct, but really what it is just take what you've said and add to it. So we almost did a little bit of it earlier, where you said, how many hands is too much? And then we just added a little bit more, a little bit more, a little bit more, and then we shifted it to disabilities. Like when people were hearing that, they weren't thinking about that we were talking about disabled people. But now we have a scene about people who are disabled running a massage studio, which just throws people's heads a massage practice. They're like, this could go so many different ways. So then maybe the four of us, what we'd do is start a scene where we'd like somebody would walk off the wall, maybe with one leg. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's like kind of where they went with it. And they're doing Thai massage with one leg, right? So yeah. You just put the one foot and pull the arms. And like, it just kind of moves wherever. And then maybe the escalation from that is somebody walks by and they say, oh man, you put Mr. So-and-so in the cobra position. So then maybe the next person is like a snake masseuse, which can go really inappropriate. Like that's just kind of how it works. Right? And you're just like, oh yeah, look at him just with that snake and whatever. But
yes.
It's different. But that's the end goal, is to get really good at that frame of mind, which is effort, which is good.
What's the most unexpected thing you've learned or gone through now with the improv classes?
I think the most difficult thing is it's supposed to be limitless possibilities, but then, like I said, you confine it through those principles. It's a funneling down, but it's to open up possibilities. So it's like really, that's just hard for me to wrap my mind around. And I would say the thing as far as probably the most difficult is putting your mind in the state that this is leaving your preconceived notion of a scene completely off the table. So like if you've got an incredible idea, you're like, holy shit, this is gold. And you step off the wall to like deliver it, but somebody else in your troupe steps off quicker than you. Mm. And then you guys start interacting. They've got no clue what you're thinking. Right? Unless you got that weird twin connection, right? That I can read your mind, but
like we have that.
Yeah, I mean, we don't like to share that with people, but sure. We have it. So like, but being able to just drop that and then it immediately be in the reality they're creating. And the phrase is, if this is true, then what else is true? So like if they come out and it's like, well, it's true that people with disabilities run these massage parlors. If that's true, then what else is true? And maybe that turns into the guy who flips pizzas with his feet. Because, I mean, if it's true, if he can do that for massage, then why couldn't they do that with pizza? So that would be true. Yeah. And like, it's just so – and you're doing that on the fly.
In front of people.
Yeah. So I would say the most surprising thing is I always respected performers before, but I would say even more now than I ever thought was possible. Like, now I laugh at the dumbest shit because I'm like, for you to even be able to get that out, unbelievable. On the spot. Unbelievable. Yeah.
But, and improv's your favorite form of comedy, right, compared to sketch and stand-up? What do you say?
I don't know. I think improv was without question the most challenging. I actually think that I would probably prefer stand-up and sketch because you can write it out before. And I'm a big person who I like a lot of repetitions. So I would like to be able to see us. Okay, that's a really funny scene with all these like people with disabilities doing things, like these amputees doing things that we wouldn't have normally considered. Okay, how can we make that even more crisp? And then just deliver it in a way that just knocks people's socks off. But I mean, I don't really know that you can take, I think it's easier to take improv classes than it is stand up and sketch classes.
Yeah.
Because it's very dynamic, which is what I was looking for.
Got it. And are you looking for this to branch out into, yeah. I know we talked a little bit about this in the past.
Yeah, I think the skills that I'm learning, I can see a direct application that would improve. First of all, once you get the game aspect of it going and you're able to step back and relax and have some fun, it becomes really fun. I think bringing that to PTs, any healthcare professional program, to help them see, to turn patient interview into a game, though you're very professional in playing it and your goal is ultimately to help somebody. But like, I think I see some utility in that and I think it lends really well to my personality. So that would be awesome. to get that to a point where I could refine that and do something with it. I've talked to some friends or clinicians who said that was part of their program. Like one of their professors was a performer and he would do like a improv physical therapy type thing. I don't know exactly, but they talk a lot about the yes and things like that.
How many dick jokes can you make in a subjective evaluation and be cool with it?
Oh, like me personally, I don't know. It could probably just keep going. I think the key would be I would be perfectly okay with any and all of them. I think the issue is keeping a straight face mm-hmm. and not getting me too is what I'd probably be most afraid of. but that's the cool thing. All you have to do is say, I'm sorry, I'm an amateur comedian, I'm working on material. Yes. That's like your get out of jail free card for being offensive.
I was workshopping some bits. I'm sorry. Let's talk about your
AI. Yeah, I'll give you credit. Like your feedback was awesome. Like I shouldn't have touched you in the leg with the instrument that way. But like,
yes,
at least it wasn't my instrument. It was just a metal instrument.
Right. But can you appreciate how that's funny?
Yeah. And then you let them know, you say, see, I just made another one while you were chastising me and like reporting me to the state. I still was able to stay in character and make another dick joke. But like, I don't know, but in seriousness, I think that would be great for that. And then taking it to clinics as well. And for me, I like helping anybody and everybody in healthcare. I would say the most fulfilling, like, patient cases from a financial lens are actually working with private practice owners and within programs because of the ripple and splash effect. Like, a lot of times like student loans or fresh professional finances is a lot more like a bout of acute low back pain where could it be really serious? Totally. Can't disregard it. A lot of times though, give it some time, change your perspective, keep moving, and you're going to get to where you need to be once you understand a few basics. And I enjoy that. And I think it's important. I think there's a lot of utility to it. But like when I talk to a business owner, their questions aren't, hey, Will, how do you make me more rich? How do you help me get more out of my employees? The question is, I love the community. Usually it's framed in, I love the community I work in. I love what I do. I love my family and I love my employees. How, with my margins, big, small, or indifferent, like, and based upon my goals, how do I get there? Like, how do I show them that I care? Because at the same time, speaking of if this is true, then what else is true? A business owner realizes no matter how much I love an employee or care about their growth and development, they can leave. They can just completely take off, right? And so they're wondering, like, how do I show them while they're here because I also want them to go to their next bigger and better thing? How do I do that without putting down my clinic, right? That's kind of that whole debate about how much do I get paid? How do I get paid? Oh, I hate my boss. Oh, like, being able to understand how they're trying to make their decisions means a lot to me. And the more that I can help create security and deeper foundation for a business, the greater likelihood we have of success for those who pass through it, those who choose to stay and those who pass through. And I just think that I like the ripple effect of that. And I'm not even Italian. Damn. Unbelievable.
Damn.
Nor dead.
Tracy, are you Italian?
I'm not. I'm Irish.
Oh.
100% Irish. I think I'm 23andMe or anything.
Mm-hmm. You never know. You never know what you'll find. I did an ancestry.com and found some shit.
That one politician and claimed that I'm Native American with 0.01%.
Does that stuff not make you nervous? So not only being an amateur comedian, I'm also a little bit of a tin hat conspiracy guy.
Yeah.
Hey, here's all my genetic information. I'm really nervous about giving out my email address, but here's everything I could possibly ever be.
That's awesome. That is like sales and marketing is so hard. It's so hard to convert people and get conversions, but let alone there's a company literally taking people's spit for $100.
Yeah. Here, spit in this tube, pay me to take it and assume I'm giving you accurate results back.
Yeah.
By the way, doesn't even matter because I've just sold you a story that you now feel good about that creates conversation with strangers mm-hmm. and connection, whether true or not. And all the meanwhile, we're just going to keep banking this up because eventually the big dollars, the billions and billions of dollars in these health companies are going to say, hey, we need some of this material from these kinds of people.
Yeah.
It freaks me out, man. I can't do it as much as I want to know.
And then the big dogs like Amazon and Chase are trying to get into the healthcare marketplace too. And And I don't know what the end goal of that will look like, but it can only be good for everybody.
Well, I mean, competition in the marketplace is a good thing. I'm just wondering what's happening behind the curtain. And the reason I say that is because, like, especially the more specific we get with some of this gene work, like, if all of a sudden that shows up on your medical record, that could exclude you from certain kinds of treatment and care that may prolong your life, but somebody else has decided that it's not worth the allocation of that money. And now maybe they just say, and they got it from that test. I don't know if that's true, but it's totally possible. Like, I've seen cases of what I do now where people have had some sort of, like, different kinds of testing for certain types of proteins and antigens that show up in their medical record that get questioned and affect some of their ratings on things that they would need to purchase for financial planning. So I just don't know the extent. All I know is giving somebody a spit, like a spit tube with all my sequence, doesn't get much personal, more personal than that. I'm not even afraid of my browser history at that point.
Yeah, there's nothing to fear now. Tyler, have you ever spit in somebody's tube?
I dropped the ball on that. I keep thinking about how I know a person who did 23andMe, and then they found out that their like parent had a bunch of other kids with other people, like cheating, and how it's like, yeah, and like how like you're just opening this door to like, hey, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, I would view it as like 'tis the season. It just means more people you should expect presents from.
Yeah. Exactly.
That's a positive spin on
that's
that.
That's a tube half full.
Yeah. Of spit. Yeah. Could you imagine if that's your job? You just are like all day just opening the top and.
Yeah.
here's some good spit.
Yeah.
This looks good.
Yeah.
Some African spit.
Yeah, well, what if they're just, like, disgruntled and mad, and every tube that comes through, they're just like, well, contaminated. I mean, that could have happened to that in that story or that case that you were talking about where you found out all those illegitimate children.
Yep.
No, that was just a disgruntled spit worker.
They just had a bad Thursday and just, I'm going to screw up some families today.
They didn't remember my birthday.
Bastard.
I'll show this company.
Yeah. So the three of you are in Texas all now. Now, like, what does that mean for the podcast?
Fucking gonna take over the world, making millions.
Oh. You already got your duck legs running on that. I like it.
Ooh. We'll see. First we should try and take on direct access and bring more full direct access to Texas. I think that'd be a good first mission. Along with helping out Jared Carter's twins, which we'll need.
Yeah, for sure. So where does it stand with Jared? It seems like that's pretty public and getting shared around, and that's been exciting to watch. What's the story with like Texas's public access?
Yeah. So historically, it's been rough, right? We're the most restricted physical therapy access state out of all the 57 states in America. The Texas Medical Association, I don't know if he's on the board of it or whatever, but he's also a legislator.
Yeah, he's somewhere. He's somewhere in the government.
Actually in Georgetown, right? I think he's in Georgetown. Which is where we are right now. And whenever it gets to committee and he's a member of one of these committees, it always gets shut down for some weird reason that we don't know. But he's an old fuck and he'll die soon, probably.
He's kind of old.
But we might need to edit that out. But
that right there is probable cause.
I'm not saying I did. But no, he's so from what we've heard, he hasn't helped that situation. Because it's, you know, people put the bill in, it would come to a committee and it would get shot down. And it can only, the sunset review is only every two years where you can bring the bill up for discussion. So this year is looking like a good year. We have some new people in office. We have a new legislator that already submitted the direct access bill. And it'll be the ninth bill to be discussed when time comes around. In the order. So right now it's looking pretty good, and we can talk about that a little more later. But there's some interesting political vibes coming out of Texas. Like Beto almost beat Cruz. So there's a weird
shift.
There's a weird shift coming around these parts.
Partner. You guys are pumped for it.
I'm pumped for it.
Yeah.
I'm change excited.
Yeah, change is always good, I think, because it creates momentum.
Yeah.
Correct. I actually have no clue what's going on in Texas politics. I'm pretty much apolitical.
It's a lot of gentlemen's, what are they called?
Like gentlemen's club kind of stuff.
Yeah,
the way it's all.
Well, I think gentlemen's clubs is more a reference to
strippers. Yeah,
is that too?
Which I mean, it's fine. They're probably included, but I mean the good old boys network, right?
Yeah.
Handshake. I was thinking the guy in Nevada that was a strip club and escort owner that got elected.
It was so that was the good old boys gentlemen club.
Yes, exactly.
Yes. At least we're all on the same page now. I just want to make sure we're using the same terms. Like Ohio's a little different than Texas, so I want to make sure we're speaking the same language.
Isn't Ohio just the North Texas?
I mean, people have called it that. At least as of today, they have. I don't really know because I've never been to Texas outside of your airports.
Yeah. How do you like our airports?
Let me think about that because I don't just want to – because this is on record and it's being recorded, so I don't want to get – I don't want to say it's true.
You don't want to, like, say you're going to murder somebody.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to say that somebody old and who will die soon. I won't say anything like that, but, I mean, they were passable. You know, they weren't memorable, but they were passable. I didn't get stranded there, so that was good.
It's always good.
And I'm sure that I like them more than Chicago, so that's good.
What has been your most memorable airport experience of your life so far?
Oh, that's a tough question.
Watching my plane leave with me not on it. And then having the lady at the desk lie to me.
She's like, no, it hasn't left yet.
I pulled up, like, so you have to be there. I can't remember what their policy was. Be at the gate 10 minutes before door closing or whatever. But I remember, like, coming off, whatever one of those, did you guys ever... Maybe, maybe not, but you guys ever remember it was a Nintendo 64, maybe, I don't know. There's a racing game called F-Zero. You ever hear of it? Mm-hmm. So basically, these little tiny spaceships, you rip around the track. There are always little, like, side cutouts that had these, like, launcher. They, like, boost your car, like, just turn it into lightning. That's what I think about with those flat escalator-looking things.
Yeah.
And so, like, I'm coming, like, flying, like a freight train off of that thing. And I'm, like, staring right at my gate, and I'm like, oh, shit, there's nobody here. And then I look at my watch. She closed the door early. And so I'm, like, standing there, and I'm, like, pounding on the door, right, just smashing it, like, hey, I'm here. And then they come out late, and I said, I've been here. And they're like, well, sir, we closed the door. And I said, yeah, I know. I know that. I was here. No, you weren't. And I said, no, I was. And she just kept arguing with me. Didn't radio down and say, hey, we've got one more passenger waiting out here. She just kept making excuses so that they could, like, pull back and do all that stuff. And then I just watch it. And there it goes, and I'm not on it. I was like, you have got to be kidding me. And I'm pretty sure that I was heading down somewhere to do a presentation in Florida. So it was time sensitive. I needed to be there. But I would say that was probably the most memorable because she lied to my face.
Yeah.
And I could have been there earlier, totally agree. But sometimes there's car accidents on the highway that you can't control.
Yeah.
Get you to the airport a little later. But that would be the most memorable.
What would you say to her if she's listening right now?
Which she is. We actually have her in studio.
Oh, perfect. Bring her up. Yeah, bring her up. That would be quite the inconvenience for her to fly all the way from Ohio to Texas just to get yelled at in front of strangers. I can appreciate it.
Do you want to workshop this bit?
Right? I just remember looking at her and I said, well, what are you going to do to help me? Because, like, this was as much your mistake as it is mine. And she's like... and she had, like, one of those phone cases that had, like, you know, like the anime ears on it or whatever.
No. Yeah.
And she's like texting and she's like, hold on a second. And then it. because the next thing I thought about was like airport security. Cause I was like, I do a pretty good job of not freaking out. Almost like Bruce Banner, right? Like that's the secret, always angry. keeping it under the surface. I was like, basically just rocking back and forth. Like, at the end of the day, this isn't worth it. It's not worth it. It's not. But like, I just eventually just looked at her and said, well, you are of no help. And I just, yeah. I would say that was one of the more memorable ones. Another one was when I told a woman in front of like the entire terminal to shut her mouth that she was stressing everyone out. So that was another one.
Can you explain more on that story?
Yeah, so that was when I lived out in the Seattle area, and I was heading out to see family. And I just remember it was a late flight. The plane was full, or it was going to be full. You could just tell by the terminal. And the plane was like getting to the gate, and they made that announcement, hey, we're running late. And this woman, I watch her, and she's like going up to, and she's just progressing through the line. And then she gets to the ticket, and she just starts yelling at the ticket counter people. Like, they're the ones like, hey, just tell them to just hold the plane out on the runway. Hold it out on the, that's like how she's reacting. Like, you guys are preventing me. And she's just yelling. She's like, and all they could say is, we're sorry, ma'am. We're sorry, ma'am. We're sorry, ma'am. And then she goes and sits down, like, just throws down her stuff. She's just sitting there really disappointed. And she's making those, like, little chirp comments. You know, like, when you meet somebody and a fight's been separated and as they're getting drawn away, they're saying stuff like, well, your mom's lasagna is terrible. Like, just throwing that kind of stuff out there. And,
which is usually what people go for.
I mean, I do.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, it's a no-brainer food, so not to be able to make it well is kind of an insult. It's like
too salty, motherfucker.
Yeah, exactly. Like, you can't tie your shoes. You're a little bitch. And it's like, well, yeah. That's why I wear Velcro. And so, like, here I go. I get up to the front of that, and she's still just chirping and chirping and chirping. And I just remember finally, like, I'm watching their faces because they're trying to stay composed and keep the stress of the rest of the terminal down. Everybody is uncomfortable. I'm pretty sure it was like the fight was probably like at 9 at night, 10 at night. And everybody's – and I finally just like turned to her and I just was, ma'am, you have got to shut your mouth. You're doing nothing to help the situation. You're stressing everybody out. You're not the only one who's delayed. And that makes nothing you say is going to make anything happen quicker. All you're doing is making everybody more miserable. Please stop talking. She like – and like everybody kind of like turned and like nodded and kind of like did like one of those little things. Like, and she's just, well, who do you think you are? And that was like, whatever.
Dude, should we talk some finances?
I mean, we can. They're not really fun, but we can.
Can we can make them fun.
Maybe.
So we, Tyler and I have just graduated. Chase has been out for a bit now.
6 months.
6 months. We have a lot of money to pay back.
I have money. Yes.
Tyler, what's your most pressing question right now about student loans that you have?
Trace brought it up the other night, like, when you're like, you're going to be all right. You know, like, are you going to be able to, at what point is a salary / debt income ratio too much where you're like, that's gone. It's gone. You might as well just go buy a revolver.
Yeah. I mean, that was quick escalation. I don't necessarily, I think we've got enough gun violence in the U.S. I don't necessarily think we need to add to it, but I get it. So like how and at what points, like what's a way to approach and look at the loan initially? Is that pretty accurate?
I don't know. I didn't follow. Finance.
So, like, you're saying, is there a ratio? Is there a magic? At what point do I off myself? How do I grade the condition of my loan?
Yeah, correct. So if someone's like, if someone comes to you like, and I'm not saying this is my scenario, but someone's like, hey, I'm 300K in debt, making 30,000. You know, or you're like,
yeah,
oh, you got it.
Like, yeah.
Or you're like, that ain't good.
Yeah, like grading a tear or a strain or something like that. You kind of go through and take a look at it. I think the first thing is you have to actually know what your loans are. Like, and I mean, are they federal loans? Are they private loans? Is it a blend of the two? Because that really dictates the direction that people can take. Because if you have if you're making 30K and you have 300 grand of private debt, I mean, that revolver is starting to look really shiny, like really shiny. Because, and the reason why is you don't have any other options. You have to pay that back. And when I say pay back, eventually you have to settle up one way or the other. But like in that situation, if it's private debt and low income, like probably your best bet is to refinance it to the absolute longest period possible so that you can bring down your monthly obligation. The problem with a lot of, I think, people's approach, fresh professionals' approach to their finances is they look at what seems familiar, and that's not always the best place to go. It's just like that acute low back pain. I have pain and pain is bad. That must mean this is bad. And it can't be that simple. You've got to look at it through a more nuanced lens. So private debt is difficult because you just don't have as much flexibility with it. But if that's 300K of federal debt, I'm going to say that's fine. You're just going to use an income-driven repayment plan, and the last thing you should do is refinance that loan, meaning take it from a federal loan to a private loan. And the reason for that is has a lot to do with the fact that the government kind of screwed themselves over, and they realized it far too late. They just brought down the floodgates on funding, saying, anybody who wants to go to school, we will give you a loan because now we have hooks in you and you got to pay us back. But then what they started to realize is that you expect so much money from these people, they just won't pay it. They're like, that's fine. I'm just not going to pay it. And most people live with very little perspective and mindfulness of the future. So they just say, screw this. I'm not going to pay it. Well, as capitalistic as we are, we're also not going to let those people in retirement die in the streets. So now the government's in a position where they're like, shit, they're not paying it now. They're going to probably just use Social Security or whatever in the future. They just became an incredible liability. We've got to find some sort of a middle ground. Enters income-driven repayment plans where they say, all right, you don't have to pay this back to us in 10 years like we originally intended. Instead, you've now got some flexibility. Let's push this out. And instead of paying it all back, pay us a percentage of your income for that time period. And then at the end, we'll forgive it. And whatever we forgive on the education side, we are going to have to tax you on it because it's almost like anybody else in the world getting a check for that amount of money. And we would make them pay taxes. So the advantage that gives those people is now you have an option of decreasing your obligation to be able to use that money for other things. Because there's no such thing as a retirement loan. And they know that. And so they want you to be able to prepare for the future. I'll pause there. Does that make sense, those two scenarios? All private, all federal?
Yeah.
Cool.
Is that I feel like my brother told me this one time, like there's something like where if you pay your loans for 10 years straight, then it's just like if you like stay with it for 10 years, they're like, okay, good. It's all wiped, done with. Is that what you're telling me?
No. So that's not a repayment plan. That's an incentive plan. And that's like the public service loan forgiveness that everybody's clamoring for to get nonprofit jobs. And because it's not a repayment plan itself, it's not like standard repayment. It's not extended graduated. It's not, you know, revised pay as you earn. Because it's not an actual plan, it's more of a program and it's an incentive. Think about that as like a bonus on your base salary. You may get it, you may not. And so that would be a situation where in a qualifying institution, so a nonprofit entity that qualifies, like that's the big thing that people get in trouble for is they just assume, oh, I'm at a nonprofit. Maybe you are. Send the paperwork in, let them tell you whether or not it counts. And then at the end of 10 years, you've made at the minimum, that's the fewest years that you can pay on that loan because it's 120 payments, so one payment a month for 10 years. Then you apply to get it forgiven. Should you get that forgiven? Completely wiped away. The forgiveness, there's nothing taxable, there's nothing that. So in that instance, yes. But that is not a repayment plan, which a lot of people say. I'll say, well, what repayment plan are you on? Oh, I'm on PSLF. No, that's not a payment plan. What's your payment plan? So, that's a good question. Any follow-ups to that?
No, but I do want to get the question in of you were mentioning like people not paying their stuff off. Should people start betting against student loans like they bet against the housing market and make it big on like, what's that movie where they...
Is that Wolf of Wall Street?
No, not Wolf of Wall Street. What's the one where it's like too big to fail or whatever? Should we?
No, that's
the housing market.
Yeah. Why am I drawing a blank? I love that movie.
Yeah, it's so good.
Christian Bale's in it, right?
Yeah. I thought it was called like Too Big to Fail.
Look it up. Use your technology. Look it up. I can see.
It's called Too Big to Fail, right? No. God bless it. Christian Bale. The listeners right now are like, you morons.
Yeah, I know. Like, I normally don't draw blanks on this kind of stuff.
If anybody's calling me a moron right now, fuck.
All I can think of is the movie Get Smart.
Big Short.
Big Short. Get Smart, Big Short. I can see a connection. Not the right one. So anyway, like, but how do you bet on it? Like, what do you... Like that was a lot different. There's a lot more layers to that. This is more just directly controlled. And I don't know what the fallout's going to be.
Are there people that are in the student loan world being like, there's some sort of ominous future with this? Because it's a huge bubble, or I don't know if that's a bubble or not, but whatever. It's a huge thing.
Well, I mean, what do you do when there's trillions of dollars of debt and people just can't pay for it? And it's kind of stagnating other areas of the economy because, well, I got to make sure I tick this box first because I don't want to get in trouble. I don't know what the fallout would be. If you're talking about as a borrower, how do you like bet against it? I think by keeping your loans federal, anything that would happen with that debt, and if they do some sort of like how they bailed out banks or they did what, like whatever student loan bailout there would be, which I just don't know that they'd be able to do it because of like it. But if you thought something like that could happen, you would need to keep your loans federal, because then once you go to a private servicer, I mean, it's basically like a mortgage, and you're going to have to fulfill that obligation with them. I don't know. I'm curious what's going to happen, because it's definitely not a sustainable model, especially with all the refinancing. Like when all the loans stayed federal, that's kind of how they like calculate rates and calculate a lot of different things with lending. And what these refinancing companies are doing is walking into this big pond of fish or this big lake, and they're just looking at the ones they want and just pulling out the best ones. So that's got to create some sort of instability in that. I don't know what the lagging effect of that is, because that's kind of how we got into this whole situation anyway, is all right, let's drop the floodgate. Let's let everybody go to school. And then they get through school. Right there, you've got a built-in lag of like 4 years, right, till somebody gets done. And then you get to start seeing, and then there's probably a lag on when people stop paying. So a lot of this just got pushed down so far down the road that they couldn't have even seen what was going to happen. And then they step back and like, oh shit, we have a problem. But by the time they've done that, it's already reached like a critical mass.
Looking back on it now, do you think
I never would have gone to college. Sorry, is that not what you
Yes.
I would have been a little bit nicer to that person working at Delta. We're good?
Yeah, we're good.
Cool. Thought I heard something. Looking back on it now, do you agree with the notion or philosophy that everybody should attend university?
That's a no.
Is that a no?
No. I just don't think so. Like, I think one of the things that frustrates me is the stigma around certain trades. Like, I remember going through high school, people would go to, they called it the MVCTC. So what was that? Miami Valley Career Technical something, whatever. Like, I remember being like, they'd show up, they'd ride the bus with us to school, and then they'd get on a different bus to take them somewhere else. And they weren't in any of our classes. So like, look at those people going to the CTC. Because they were usually the people in the class you just knew, like, college was not on their radar. Like, if college was the bullseye on a dartboard, they were off center for sure. Like, and like I just remember having that kind of stigma against them. I didn't know what the hell they did or any of those types of things, but like those kinds of skills and trades, and which now we're just kind of rehashing all of Mike Rowe from Dirty Jobs, all of his arguments, right? But I mean, I think that we spend. We say, oh, you don't know what you want to be? Go to school. Well, how the hell are you going to pay for it? I think maybe the other answer is, what's kind of a general area or realm you're interested in? Cool. Go work in some field loosely related to that. Oh, you want to work in financial services? That's fine. Go work as a teller at a bank. Work through the promotions. See where they get you. And at some point, you'll get to a point where they'd say, we'd love to push you into the next thing, but you don't have the right education. You should probably go to school. All right, cool. Like, I think that's a much better approach than just pushing people who don't know what they want to do in and through the schooling system. Now, if you're going through school and you're like, I'm going to be a physician, I'm going to be a physical therapist. Like, if you know that definitively, well, then no shit, you got to go to school. I still think it should be a shorter process, but I think way too many people got to the end of the road, got to the end of high school, which is, I mean, my opinion of primary education, a lot of times it's more like babysitting than anything. And the original notion of it was to train people who could take orders and put them in to like factories and do things like that. So I have problems with that, but I totally agree. I think like we pushed the wrong kinds of people. I think it should be something that you need, not something that you necessarily want to do. Okay, cool. I don't have the qualifications to do accounting. I need to go get a degree in accounting to pass this exam. But I'll pause because I feel like I'm getting a little ranty.
I was enjoying it.
We like that
whole like education system to help to get the factory ready. I like
That was the whole thing. You're training people how to take orders and to work and to collaborate in this sort of a way and just show up and check out and do that. So then you take them from like this, it's almost like daycare for adolescents and teens, et cetera. And then you push them into the next one where all they have is more autonomy. And then we give them free money. They don't even have to earn their allowance. You just sign a piece of paper, a check shows up, and then they hit, then next thing you know, they're like, wait, we can, it almost becomes like, did you guys ever see the movie Hook?
No,
like the you Peter guys have Pan? Never seen the movie Hook with Robin Williams.
Peter Pan. Yeah,
yeah. I was about to just close my laptop and walk.
That would have been awesome.
I can put up with you guys not knowing F-Zero because that's Super Nintendo, but Hook, it's not acceptable. So I mean, what happens with those kids? All the Lost Boys, they just gather around and do whatever the hell they want, which I think is cool. There's something cool about that. But that's basically what college is. But taxpayers give them money.
Yeah, all the Lost Boys have loans.
It's like that.
Yeah. And so, like, I don't know. That just bothers me. You're not forced to take responsibility. Some people, because it's inherently who they are, make great experience, make great decisions. And I think there's a lot to be said for the socialization of school. But at the same time, what's the detriment? What's the cost? And I think you see the cost. You know, I talk to people every single day in healthcare and outside of healthcare who said, if I knew the impact of my decisions to take loans to have a good time during school, there's no way in hell I would have gone to school. I'd have figured out another way to party. Like, and so like, I mean, I don't know. That's just, that bothers me because the institution, it's, you're a successful high school program if you funnel all your people into college. Awful.
Not good.
Yeah, less than favorable.
Damn. That's a lot of that's hitting hard, hitting close to home.
Well, it crushes me too, because I just thought as long as I could tell people I was in school getting more education to do the next better thing, people looked favorably upon me. So it was my way of kind of diving into society instead of being like, guess what? Kind of stuck. I'm working at this job I don't really like, but I'll figure it out. Like, that's not as admirable. And, like, you know, everybody wants to look good in the eye of the public.
Yeah.
But that causes a problem. And then what happens is this. So then what's the pinch point? Like, what's a symptom I see of it? People are bitching at their schools for not providing a financial education in grad school. Grad school is to give you a skill set that differentiates you from everybody else. It's not to teach you how to be an adult.
Yeah.
That's not what grad school is. And so what do people do? The last person you talk to is the first person you blame. And so I think, like, and that's exactly what happens when my school never told me this is what loans were and this is this and that. Yeah, no shit, because they assumed that you knew that before you got there. I was the same way. I didn't know any of this stuff at all. And so, like, a lot of what I talk about is, like, Will, you should have, could have, and would have done better if you quit relying on other people to make your decision, which comes back to autonomy, tying in the whole Texas Practice Act. I'm not blaming that because it's the, what did we say? That was the Good Old Boys Network. What was the other one?
Gentlemen's Club. Good Old Boys Gentlemen's Club.
Yeah, I know, right? So, like, but bringing that back around, that the same thing for this, though, is it's like, people should understand what autonomy means and how they need to go through critical reasoning to make decisions. Like, it's not the school's fault that you took out loans to get a degree, to take boards, to be able to see people and make their lives better. Ultimately, that's not their responsibility. I do think they should make a better job of making it known what the impact of these things are. And now that you are here because you haven't learned it before, here's an avenue to learn about it and to educate yourself. to make better decisions. But I don't think at baseline, it's any grad program's responsibility to teach you how to be an adult. And that's ultimately what personal finance is. How do I be an adult with what I'm receiving? And how do I know, like, how do I look at those things? But they just keep passing that buck. Like, I didn't learn shit about money in grade school. I didn't learn anything really about it in junior high. I didn't learn anything about it in high school. What I learned in my home ec class, how to write a check. What? How stupid is that? How to make biscuits. What?
That's a good skill. Biscuits
are nice. Yeah. And how to stitch a pillow. Like, these are really, really helpful in making, like, what kind of loans are you going to take out? Let me consult my stitching skill. Let me talk to my pillow. Yeah. Let me stitch a solution here. Well, based on this, I should definitely go to school because I won't make it as a seamstress. So, yeah, I'll take the loan money. But that's not helpful. So then, and I don't care. It's all about repetition, right? Like, teach basic skills in elementary. Teach it again in a different way in junior high. Teach it again in high school. Teach it again. Like, you show up to undergrad, like, in order to get your loans, you should have to pass some sort of a proficiency exam of what the loans are and what they mean and how you do them. And then, cool, you matriculate through and now you get ready to graduate. You should have to take, instead of a 101 student loans personal finance, that should be another class. That should be your 301, right? Your 401. Like, I don't understand that. Because the only thing we should be learning in grad school is how to be better at our craft. That's what we should be learning.
So what is the basic thing of finance? Like, if you ask anyone, they know mitochondria is the powerhouse of the cell.
Yeah.
Because they hammer that home all the way through. So what is the one thing everyone should get through grade school, through middle school, through high school?
And let's just talk about the goddamn mitochondria for sipping into our society. Who do they think they are? Like, what's the conspiracy behind mitochondria?
If you see it, they'll probably tell you.
Five motherfuckers. That's it. That's it.
I think maybe mitochondria is almost like a fireman. Like, you don't blame a fireman for the fire, right? But you show up and that's who you see on the scene. They're just like, hey, my job's just to create power. Everybody's putting a lot more on me.
That's what they want you to think,
Will. I'm just doing work. Yeah, I think that's what's going on there. But as far as like that basic thing, financially, I think there are a couple things. I think understanding a practical way to budget and, like, I think even just basic taxes, like, just having people understand what you're getting paid is not what you're going to receive. Like, as simple as that is, because what people do is they say, I'm getting paid $50,000, $70,000, $90,000, $100,000. And in their mind, because that's the simplest, that's the most round number, what they're doing is they're building their lifestyle and they're making their financial decisions before they even get to them. It's one of the reasons why I'm as hefty as I am. I don't make my food decisions before I show up to the restaurant. So then I read whatever looks best. I'm like, oh, I'm going to have that and that and that and that, and I'll drink this. And the next thing you know, I'm like, this was a terrible mistake. Like, that's why I don't even look forward to Thanksgiving, because that's how I feel multiple days of the week. So it's like, I think the same thing financially is just helping people recognize how that works and helping people understand realistically budgeting. Like, what are the types of things that you'll need that money to do? And then I think another basic thing is understanding basic employer benefits and different types of accounts. Like, just really rudimentary. Like, okay, why should I care about my 401k? Okay. Like, all you know is it's for retirement, but you don't understand what kind of money it takes to live in retirement. Like, that's the hardest thing, is getting people to realize that you're here today, but you'll be here in the future. And if you're not preparing today for that future, it's going to take a hell of a lot more work once you get there. And every time you see a compounding interest example, everyone's like, man, no shit, I should have done that like 15 years ago. But you don't get that time back. So I think that time is irreplaceable. It's better to fail young, early, and often than it is to wait to take a leap and to do something. Because, like, that's the cool thing about America, is like, you can fail and fail a lot because there's a lot of safety nets. Like, that's what I wish I would have done. I wish I would have been like, well, shit, this time is going fast and I'm not going to get it back. I should take more chances now. Those are the types of things I really wish I would have known. Because then worse comes to worse, I end up in college, right? And then I float alone for a little bit. Like, there's so many little areas and avenues and twists and turns that you can take. But, like, if you don't understand the true value of money, you don't understand how it needs to work for you today and into the future, then you start to make monopoly-like decisions where it's like, yeah, no shit, I'll pay. Oh, I landed on a hotel, I'll pay $2,000. I don't care. You know, like it's so easy to transact that money if you don't know what it should be doing for you, which is the whole problem with the student loans. Most graduate students, they realize what money is when that first bill comes through and they look, they're like, oh, I'm going to do this with my check, I'm going to do that. And then up shows this bill and they're like, I'm not going to be able to do any of those things. So I think they learn through negative experience, which I think is fine, but I don't think it's the right way. I didn't give you a specific answer because I don't think there's one little thing. But if it did have to be one thing, it's that time is worth far more than money, so leverage it as fast as possible, as young as possible, something like that.
Nice.
Do you believe, what's that quote from Dave Ramsey, of every dollar should be accounted for and working towards something?
I think you should be aware of it, because if not, then money loiters, and loiterers just get tickets, right? Like, it doesn't really help anybody. So I do think every dollar should have a job. I'm glad you didn't dig into other principles and philosophies of his, because I don't necessarily want to shit sling.
Yeah.
But I will say that, like, I do think that you should know what they're doing. That doesn't mean that every time you get a paycheck, you watch that dollar to an account. I think it's just like developing good positive movement behaviors. Make it a habit so it's not a chore. And that just decreases the amount of mental effort you have to allot to it, which frees up the mind for other creative things, because the mind is able to do a lot and able to process a lot. But if it's overstressed, we see it, right? That's like the new pain models. All right, what else is contributing? Like, when you sit back and somebody tells you their injury and what they're for, you're like, I remember sitting there being like, in my mind, I'm like, how in the hell did this get, like, you picked up a bag of groceries and it put you on the floor and you're crippled? Like, how in the hell are you so far deconditioned that your body can't handle the task of moving groceries? Like, and then you realize, oh yeah, this person has 4 kids. They're a single parent. They've got this due. They're behind on that. Their car just pooped out. They got all these things. Like, and so I think it's the same thing with what we're talking about, is like, make certain things a habit and automated. So that way, when you set it up, yeah, know what every dollar is doing. But once it's there and it's automated, just check in on it every once in a while. Do something to test yourself. Admittedly, I forgot what your question was because I got ranty.
The Dave Ramsey.
But then I went back to it. I pulled it.
There you go.
How do you set your own budget? Do you have a certain software that you like? Do you use a certain philosophy?
So mine's really simple. I make sure all my bills are automated and paid out, and that things that need to go to accounts go to accounts. And then whatever is left over, I don't sweat spending. Like, and so that just takes you sitting down, seeing what your numbers look like and seeing how things work. As far as software, there's so many different kinds. I think it's exactly like exercise. Find one that meets your needs, that suits you. I know that some people like getting really analytical, so they'll use an app or a software called You Need a Budget, or YNAB is the acronym. I think it's like YNAB.com. And you just tell it what your goals are, tell it where you are, you link your accounts, and it pings you and lets you know who and what and where and those types of things. I've seen people do it very successfully just through Excel. I know some people who sit down every month and just do it like old paper and pencil. I think the first and most important thing that you need to do before you start trying to put constraints on your money flows, understand what your baseline behaviors are. So just tracking it. And I use like a real simple tracking app. It's called Everlance, Everlance. And I just input everything that I spend. So then you can sit down at the end of the month and you can just have an idea of where things are going and what things are doing. Because like, if all of a sudden I've never participated in CrossFit and I just try to do the programming, I mean, I'm going to sideline myself because you're just not ready for it. And I think that's the big thing. You know, I see different people who have different successes, even in the PT world, right? Like Jared Casaza of like Fifth Wheel PT and some other folks who kind of follow his more mindset. I talk to people, say, oh man, I want to do what Jared does. And I look at their budget and like, I'm like, he saves like 90% of his income. You can't save 10. Like, what makes you think that all of a sudden you can flip that? And what his short-term goals are not what yours are. You just told me you want a house and a comfortable lifestyle for your family. Jared wants to be able to spend half the year in Asia. Like, those are incompatible goals. Like, you can't do that to yourself. But I think what you can pull from that is a positive desire to save more, So know what you're doing currently, and then just like incremental progression in the clinic, working whether it's strength and conditioning or with the patient, grade that up and just start moving that forward. That's kind of how I would approach it.
It's all about the programming, even in financials.
Hey, you know what? That's one thing I love about physical therapy. Once we realize how well the most important principles of the profession apply to the different areas of life, like, you really get pretty far ahead pretty quick.
We just tied it all to finance, improv, physical therapy.
Everything. That's what I like to do. I like to link things.
Link them.
I played with Lego a lot as a kid.
Yeah.
That's where it comes from.
Most memorable Lego experience as a kid.
I always would build guns. Guns is probably my jam.
Yes.
Yeah. Space guns, military guns, gangster guns. You pick it. I build it. I mean, it was ugly. If you looked at it, you're probably like, that's just the letter L. So, yeah, with your
limited, heart, it was a gun.
Yeah, with my mind and my heart, they became a gun.
Yeah.
Any other questions? Like, I kind of, yeah, I'll pause.
I feel like I was hogging the questions, so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I don't think so.
Well, I mean, both of you have asked questions. Well, all three of you. I don't know why I said both. I don't know. You and that didn't make the cut, but somebody for a split second wasn't in my brain. But I think, like, going back to and, like, bookending the question that was actually kind of kicked off the financial ones was, like, how do I know if I'm screwed with my loans? Like, I think that was one that needs a little bit more work, because I would caution fresh clinicians to make snap judgments to refinance their loans into private. Not because I don't think it's an important step for the right person, but once you do that, like, that's an irreversible decision. And let's say you're like, oh, I'm going to work outpatient. I'm going to grind it. I'm going to start my own clinic. I'm going to just start stacking paper. It's going to be awesome. That's how you feel when you get out of school. And then you hop in a private practice or even in, like, one of the more commercial PT companies. And you're just like, outpatient is not for me. And you end up in acute care in a qualifying hospital, you know, maybe like the VA. And now you could have qualified for maybe PSLF. Well, you went and refinanced your loans because you were going to have an empire, because you wanted to burn the ships, right? So that you had that hustle and that grind and that fever and that flow, and now I can't turn back. Like all those, like, current popular entrepreneur buzz things, well, you just fucked yourself, like, because now you have to pay back the debt. Like, so I would say, like, be quick to get a plan and be quick to review the plan, but be slow to make concrete decisions. Because then you just increase your stressors. So I think knowing that, getting an idea of that, and I think that's probably some of the most important ways to kind of approach that loan scenario. Because let's say you get in the mill or you're in the hospital setting, and then I've had a lot of people recently say, I am starting my own practice, like, right now. What do I do? Well, I mean, you need some flexibility. I would advocate using an income-driven repayment plan. I don't give a damn how much your loans are. But at least you're bottoming out your required payment. And if you're starting your own practice, you can tell the government, hey, I'm out of work. I'm starting my own thing. I might make $1,000 a month. But they're going to recalculate your payment, and you're going to pay damn near $0 a month. Look at that flexibility that gives you as a new practice owner to, like, be able to, cool, now you bring in $5,000. It doesn't all have to go to your loan. Now you can reinvest it in a course, a piece of equipment, some sort of marketing, things like that. But that was kind of like, but again, it comes back to that flexibility, not making absolute decisions.
Is there any benefit to having the mindset of, I'm going to try to pay these loans off as quick as possible?
Totally. Like, well, like, some people, I've talked to people who, like, it's dividing their relationships. I don't think student loans are worth breaking up a relationship. I mean, and if it's creating that much stress, you just got to pay those loans off. I've also seen it where couples got behind it together. You know, one couple was kind of like, I don't want to worry about any of the financial stuff. That's all you. Spouse makes a decision. Then they finally talk about it. Maybe it was a long car ride that made them do it. Boom, they talk about it. And then they decide, you know what? Together, we're going to do this. I'll pick up an extra job. You'll pick up an extra job. Let's just put as much money as possible towards this. Awesome. And that's great. Pay that shit off. But like, if you're looking mathematically, a lot of times, depending on like, especially in that 300,000, 30,000 situation, which obviously is just an example. But if that's your situation, don't pay that shit back. Because by the time you finally get it done, you have just carved so much time has been forfeited in preparing for your own future. Like, it becomes detrimental. But people do that because it's easy. And it's in terms of like the process, here's my money, here's my debt, paid off. But a dollar that goes to debt can never go anywhere else. A dollar that goes to yourself can go to lots of different places. Comes down to don't spend all your money, right? So I do think that there's definitely times we're paying it all off fast because there's a lot of upside to having no debt. But there's also a lot of side of having liquid assets or just assets, like your own money, your own net worth, that if you pay off all your money towards your debt, you just can't have. But that's fine. Do you have any follow-ups to that? I feel like I kind of skirted it a little, but hit most of it.
I think it's just kind of such a weird mindset to have, especially as we talk to more business owners and people in business. When people start up businesses, they take a business loan and things like that. And there's even people that recommend, and we'll see if you suggest this as well, of taking out another loan to help pay for a student loan with a higher interest. And just that mathematics behind loans and when to take out one and being comfortable with being in debt to some degree is still kind of foreign.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that is generational. Like, that's our generation, that's our environment, which is one of the things that makes it really difficult. I work with a lot of, as you can imagine, like, you're making significant financial decisions. A lot of people fall back on their previous network who happen to be family members. They've never had to deal with this. The only times that where people can kind of wrap their minds around it are maybe people who have family members who were business owners who had to take loans. And that's the closest thing that they can relate to the student debt situation. But like, to apply the same advice from that your parents used, you know, 30, 40 years ago, et cetera, to today's environment, I don't think that that's right. They have a lot of things on their side that we didn't have, and vice versa. I mean, just take technology, for example. No way in hell would we have ever known each other in our parents' time. Like, we just couldn't have communicated so easily. You know, Trace couldn't have sent me a message like, hey, they're being total slackers and not getting here on time, so we're going to screw up your day. Like, he never would have been able to do that. And he didn't do that. But I'm just saying, like, so speed of communication and speed of change is there. But it is a difficult mindset to get into. I think the caution and the danger to that, or maybe the other side of that, of that double-edged sword, is that sometimes people are afraid to do the difficult thing. And the difficult thing for them might be to pay off the debt. Like, if you're like, people float a lot of like business ideas to me, and a lot of them are total shit. Like, they think they're great and they think they're unique, and they're not. And I can tell they haven't done, there's no due diligence there. And they believe that if I sweat and I grind and I do this, I can make it possible. If your idea is not a viable idea, it is not possible. No matter how much of it is your passion, no matter how much you believe in it, no matter how, like, those feelings, they don't cash checks. They can fuel a dream in a viable like direction. But like, that's why I think finding mentors and finding people and really thinking it out, writing it out, and especially bridging from a very secure activity to something insecure, like starting your own business, I think that that's a very important process. Like, I'm all for the like burn your ships to stay motivated and focus and push through a difficult day, like to flatten a molehill instead of making it a mountain. But I think like getting comfortable with debt is okay if what you're putting your money towards instead of the debt is viable. Putting money, lots of money into the stock market and lots of things for future goals, that's viable. We have a track history that shows that, as long as your expectation is realistic. We've seen that, you know, a strong marketing plan coupled with a strong skill set and expertise delivered to a community that's in need, that's a viable business model. Like, but hoping that you put all this money in your affiliate marketing thing is maybe viable for long term, I just don't know. Like, I just, can that work? Totally. But like, now I see people all the time who say, well, I'm a business owner. If the company who you're like shilling for goes under, is your business still there? If the answer is no, you're not a business owner. Like, that's just not true. But a lot of people want that, and they try that, and they do that. So that's kind of like a long, that's the kind of the thought train that you sort of kicked out of the station with that question.
Got it, man. Well, I definitely want to have a part two of this when I understand my loans a little bit better.
And, hey, Tommy, man.
And after the 6 months period kicks in, which would be like February for us, and it gets real, and we have to actually decide payment plans and whatnot. But that should have been just decided a long time ago.
Right. But anything else that would be helpful? Any other questions, things?
I wanted to, we can circle back to comedy as we're wrapping up, if you're okay with it.
I'm good.
Oh, before we go to comedy, any last things on your head or any huge tip that you see out there in new grad PT world or just with talking to business owners that you can give some words of wisdom to a problem?
I think a couple of things. If you're solving your problems by swiping a credit card, if you're saying, if I do this, it will pay off in a month and I'll be able to pay this bill, I'd really caution you to examine that idea. I'm starting to like run into a lot of real like driven, hungry people who have a lot of opportunity, but their belief is not being substantiated. And like, you got to know when you're done, because you got to know, like, here's my expectation. If it's not met, I've got to separate myself from that. You can't continue to do that, because now you've got a bigger problem, because now what are you going to do? Like, and so I think that's one. I think the other thing is, like, especially for the fresh professional entrepreneur, is be okay not putting money away in retirement accounts. For like, you need to be okay that you're not doing the same thing that your friend who's been an accountant for 5-10 years is doing. Like, you've got to be okay with that, because a sustainable business will generate income and opportunities that no amount of money you throw into your 401k or IRA will be able to do for you. And you'll be able to fund things, a lifestyle, and different types of stuff that. So like, maybe to distill it down and make it more simple, like, don't live with typical advice if you know your situation is atypical. Talk to somebody who can give you perspective on your atypical situation. Yep, I would say those are probably my two advices. Don't get so caught up in the hype that you bury yourself under credit card debt, and get some perspective from people who maybe have a similar point of view and experience.
And that last one's really hard, as you said too, with the generational differences, and then with just you have to find mentors that you're trying to get where they are, right? You can't, whether it's just mom and pop giving you their advice from their perspective, you have to find somebody that really understands you.
Yeah, and you have to accept that you can't get the upside of all situations. That's part of autonomy and being an adult, and maturity is realizing, by making this decision, I forfeit this on the other side, which is something that I'm finding is very difficult for people to accept. Like, you can't be pissed that you can't swim forever if your goal is to like put 1,000 pounds on your back and squat it. Like, those are two opposing goals. And you can't be mad that you don't have the resting heart rate of that athlete, you know, like, you can't. Like, and I think that's probably one of the biggest mindset issues that I'm seeing, is that people are trying to do that. And all it does is create stress and tension that's not necessary. But you also have to be able to like not bullshit yourself, which is why I think having strong mentors. And at the same time, even with mentors, you always have to be mindful that they're in a different place and have a different experience set than you do. Like, if you feel and know that your best thing is to step away and regather, like, you have to be okay doing that. Like, at the end of the day, it's you. And that's like what matters.
It's not that lady yelling at everybody in the terminal.
Yeah, that bitch is going to get hit.
Rocked.
Like, I remember that, just to dovetail that, like, bookend that. I got up to the counter and the guy was like, I really appreciate you doing that for us. We were not allowed to say anything like that. Thank you. I want to be like, well, how about you show some appreciation with a first class upgrade? That'd be awesome.
Right? And you start yelling at him.
And the, boom! That's for not giving the upgrade. But, yeah, I thought that was really funny. Forgot about that part.
I mean, who are your biggest comedy influences growing up?
Right now and kind of growing up, I would say who I relate a lot with. There's a comedian. His name is Gary Gulman, G-U-L-M-A-N. What I really like about Gary is he had just unreal athletic potential. I definitely did not have unreal athletic potential, but like what I appreciate about him is he had a lot going for him and then he went a different direction. And then he's been very open about like a mental health breakdown that he had had over the past, I don't know, year or 2 years, and how he's support. I don't know. He's just like so real with that. I just love that. Part of me hates the next name that I'm going to say just because it's so trendy now, but it's like Joe Rogan. Yeah. It's really like, I hate that I had to say that, but.
Oh, you're a Rogan fan?
Yeah. Oh, and people are like, oh, and like that automatically gets you classified. But like, I was listening to Joe Rogan before he was that cool. He's always been kind of cool, but before he was that cool. And I think the reason for him is he's got like a real, he knows his blind spots. He looks for, he has really significant interests outside of his thing. And he really gives a shit about other people. And he like uses his platform to better other people's lives. And like, that's admirable. Interestingly, he like hates chiropractors. So that's always interesting to listen to him rail on that. But then at the same time, I listen to him talk about some health stuff. I'm like, no, it's just not true. But that's not the point. So I really like the two of them. And then I really appreciated the comedy workings of like Dan Aykroyd and John Candy. Like really like good stuff. And Steve Martin, like all of those kind of, some of like that original SNL type era, a lot of just the founders. Because that was in a time like now it's becoming more acceptable to be like, be involved in that. Like they were totally in a, I don't give a shit. This is what I like to do. And I think it's because one of my favorite things to do is find in an entertaining way, communicate important information.
Yeah.
Because different people are receptive to different things. And like, that's probably, yeah.
Speaking truth to power.
I like that. Good deal. Anything else?
I don't think so.
You know, we've been trying to do this for like a year, right?
Yeah, that's my fault.
No, I would say that's our fault because I don't like to pester people. At least we always seem to high-five each other at conferences.
Yeah.
I laugh because I always come in from the front half of the conference, and then you show up and we like high-five each other on the way out.
Yes.
Tagging it in.
We slept on – we didn't sleep on the same couch, but for SSPT last year, you were shacking with Will and Alex, right?
Yeah. And then I tagged out and you took my bed.
Yeah.
Or I warmed the bed for you.
Yes. It's all about warmth.
Yeah. Exactly right.
Bring it back. Hopefully we'll see each other again at a conference.
Hopefully we'll both be able to stay the whole time too.
On the same couch.
I know. One could only be so lucky. Two could only be so fortunate.
I would love to collab on some sketch comedy with you or something that we can do.
Yeah, that'd be cool. I think it'd be neat, especially as these things kind of evolve and build out. Like, I was a little hesitant to like share that idea out to all the listeners and types of things because nothing's more frustrating than when somebody bastardizes a good idea.
Yeah. Like,
shit. They didn't do that very well, but I'm developing like, that's why I'm putting in time in the trenches. So I can say we've got formal training, but
yeah.
Well, good deal, guys. I'll shut my mouth and let you guys go. I've got things to do. I got to get ready for my show.
Yes, dude. Good luck, man.
I'm going to need it.
Lots of do you want to plug before you go, like the financial physio or anything else you got going on where people can reach you?
Yeah, I think that's the easiest way. Like Anthony Mariotto basically got sick and tired of me not having an easy way for people to get a hold of me. So they, if you just go to financial physio, that'll list like podcasts and stuff that I've been on. But ultimately, all it is just for people to be able to click on the link, go to my calendar and set up a time to talk to me. But financial physio is the easiest way to probably do that. I would say that's probably the plug. And if you have any suggestions of what I need to change on that, let me know. Chances of me implementing them are probably not very high because I don't even own that website. Anthony literally bought it for me and set it up because he was sick of it. But that's the easiest way to get in touch.
And where are you going to be performing tonight?
Black Box Improv in Dayton, Ohio.
All right, listeners, go see him. It will be far too late when you hear this.
You should have seen him 2 weeks ago, right?
Yeah. Any other tour dates coming up? Where can people catch him, man? You going hitting up Vegas?
Maybe someday. Coming to a CSM, PPS, or whatever. Yeah. Next conference.
Opening up for Gary sometime.
Yeah, right? All right, man.
I will. Appreciate you so much, man.
Yeah, take it easy.